Julia, thank you very much. There's enough material there for an entire conference, I think. Sadly, given the demands of the House of Lords, we've only got time, I think, for one round of questions. So if we take three, we'll make them good. And I think you've also got a standing invitation to get in touch about the inquiry too. There in the middle, gentleman there. Thank you very much.
Jeff Beacon, Pollution Tax Association. Perhaps part of the problem academics have with government, or government departments certainly, is that the departments don't really always want to hear the message. I'm thinking of Adrian Williams' work on beef, which shows what an enormous carbon footprint it has, and DEFRA, it's very hard to find anything in DEFRA that mentions that anymore. There's research showing that carbon will soon be coming out of the tundra, and the Climate Change Committee don't seem very keen to know about that. And on carbon, I think carbon rationing got kicked into the lung glass by a DEFRA report. And I think academics have got a hard job, you know, telling governments what ought to be told them, but the governments don't want to hear.
Thank you. We'll take two more. At the back there, gentleman with the blue shirt. Thank you.
Mike Goodfellow-Smith from Quest for Future Solutions. Two points. What about the identification of the obstacles to behavioural change? The one that strikes me as most useful would be the way in which planning authorities right now are blocking a lot of applications for photovoltaics or other renewables, even against government incentives and government policy. How do we deal with that one? And that's been an ongoing one with the planners for a long, long period of time. And secondly, I'd like to just pick up on your point on the design of legislation. Very quick example. Many years ago, I was involved taking the Department of the Environment out to America to look at the contrast between their waste management policies and the design of the producer responsibility obligations 1997. Yeah. It was a disaster, the PRO. It's taken 15 years to get to a point comparable with California 15 years ago. Design of legislation, I think, is critical.
Yep. Thank you very much. One more. Any takers for one more? Please. Yeah. Thank you.
You looked enthusiastic.
There's a lot to say. Hetty Ianzu from Be The Change. I'm wondering whether you looked at the work of Everett Rogers around adoption criteria and things, and that building that in, the sort of six key pieces. One of the things, lovely stories, is people will not invest in insulation, for example, because you can't see it. And there's a lot of work that's been done around that, which I think could feed in very usefully to all of our work. But anyway.
Thank you very much.
Shall I have a go?
Please.
I'm not sure, as I said, I don't think I can answer these questions. I'm not sure that Daisy can either. But let me say something about governments not wanting to hear the messages of academics. I'm only a quasi-academic, I'm not a real one. But I've been a bit of an academic at various stages in my life. I don't think governments really do want to listen to academics. They say they do, but they don't, because they know what they want to do. So I think there's something, and that's why I use the word devious advisedly. I think there's something about how academics have to be more devious in how they present the findings of their research. If you look at how the Roundtree Trust produces its findings, and you know, it's got very detailed research, but the findings are quite short. They're very targeted at particular policy areas, and it seems to me that there's a bit missing, which isn't only about the translation of research. It's not about the technical things there. It's actually about how the message is delivered. I often think academics are not their own best friends in getting stuff onto the government agenda. And I often think that governments think they want to listen to academics, but actually they don't when they're inconvenient, and they very often are, as they should be. So I think there's something here about how you get the message framed in a way that will appeal to policy people, and also about how academics spend some time, I would argue. I think it really is important that quite a lot of academics spend a bit of time doing some policy work as well. Actually, I do think there should be more academics going into government briefly and coming out again. I think the way we don't do what the Americans do, so well, which is have people go in for a very short time and come out again. We've seen some of it, and some of it I think we saw some really impressive academics coming into government, trying to look at, say, evaluation and actually making a huge difference. It tends to be quite short-term, funded, say, by the ESRC, but you could do more of that, and it seems to me that there's a really strong small-p political aim there, I think, for academia as a whole, in encouraging the research councils to fund fellows who sit in government departments showing how those particular techniques, say around evaluation, are used. That would be magnificent if every government department had somebody who was an academic specialist who knew how to evaluate policy interventions. I think some of the stuff we saw is stuff that we wouldn't have seen. So that's the first thing. Mm-hmm. And do governments want to listen? No, of course they don't, but there are ways of making governments listen. Secondly, obstacles. There are huge obstacles, and governments often are quite sort of, when I say two-faced, I don't mean they're deliberately being deceitful. They're just looking in different directions because they've got different constituencies they're trying to please all the time. So I think one of the things with obstacles is either trying to get round them. And I do think there is something about people being very linear in the way they think. And I think academics are quite linear often in the way they think. And I think very often getting people to change their view in government is by going round the side. You find a different way of getting to them. And you often make your point by getting in on a completely different issue. So I do think deviousness seems to me absolutely key in all of that. Okay. And the third point about, did we look at the Everett Rogers stuff? No, not particularly. But, there's all sorts of stuff about, will people, individuals change behaviour if they can't see it? Will individuals change? I mean, I think we know a lot more about how individuals will change their behaviour than we do about how to change population behaviours. I mean, an area that I know quite a lot about is changing people's behaviour in alcohol addiction and drug addiction. And I think, you know, it's now pretty well attested that, you know, what things work and what things don't work, and some of it, the jury's still out on some of it. I think we know more, and some of the things that, you know, stop people doing the things that they think they ought to do are really bizarre, like, you know, actually, they can't see it. Or, you know, why do we all slow down because of rumble strips on the road? I mean, there are some quite bizarre features there, but we do know how it changes individual behaviour. There's a lot of research in that. I think the bit that's really missing is not how you change individuals, but how you actually get a population change. And I think that that's the one where really, I think the really hard work needs to happen. And I think in sustainable living, you know, we can change a lot of individuals. I'm sure we're going to have a lot of people doing carbon offsets and all of that. You know, all of that, it'll get more fashionable, etc. Unless it becomes a population-owned thing, as indeed, you know, the stuff around passive smoking, and people didn't like it at the beginning, but it's become population-owned, I think it's very difficult. And I think that's the area where I would say to all of you, any more work you can do, gratefully receive, preferably in the next 4 weeks.
Thank you very much. I've never been more reluctant to cut a session short, but given that the House of Lords is calling and the taxi is waiting...
Yeah. Daisy's got to count the votes and I've got to go and vote.
Daisy is glaring at me. that was an incredibly rich session. Julia, thank you so much. Okay. The message I'm taking from that is the need for much more creative deviousness. And that may well be woven through the rest of the afternoon. We're now going to